Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. $9,000. That's about how much the state of Massachusetts spent on healthcare in 2018 per person, a total of more than $60 billion. As the total cost continues to rise, more than a 3% increase from 2017 to 2018, there are multiple reforms being talked about both locally and nationally. Governor Charlie Baker's new healthcare bill focuses on primary care, behavioral health, and prescription drug prices. On the national stage, Senator Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All proposal is facing deep scrutiny over its potential cost. And a new WBUR poll released just today found that while Elizabeth Warren is currently the top choice for Massachusetts voters in the 2020 Democratic presidential primary, her healthcare proposal is not. So, here with us in Studio 3 to break it all down is Rosemarie Day, founder of Day Health Strategies, which works with private and public organizations on health reform. She's also the former chief operating officer of the Massachusetts Health Connector. Rosemarie, welcome.
Thank you.
Also on the line with us is Jonathan Gruber, professor of economics at MIT and a key architect of both the Massachusetts healthcare reform known as Romney Care and the National Affordable Care Act. Jonathan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
So I mentioned Governor Baker's bill. It's probably the biggest component would be that it requires all hospitals, physician groups, and insurers to increase spending on primary care and behavioral health by 30% over the next 4 years. To both of you, and I'll start with you, Rosemarie, what are your initial thoughts or reactions to that approach?
I think it's fantastic. It really is something that the U.S. is lagging on. We need to rebalance our health, the spending of our healthcare dollars. So, as you noted, we spend an awful lot of money. We need to reinvest some of those funds and get at things that will have been proven to improve health and spending on preventive care through primary care, geriatrics, et cetera, and then on behavioral health is where we need to go.
Jonathan Gruber, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd caveat it with, you know, Rosemarie properly used the word rebalance. I don't see where the rebalancing is in this plan. I see it's a request for more. I would like to know how it's going to get paid for. Where's the less going to come from? I don't see this as less spending on other things. I just see it as more spending on primary health care and mental health. And that, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. That may be a great idea. But it, let's be clear, it's not just a rebalancing, it's additional spending. I think we should be clear, that will not pay for itself. That is additional spending. The notion that, in some sense, preventive care somehow pays for itself is wrong. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It's probably a good thing. But we have to be clear it's going to cost some money. I'd like to know sort of what the budgetary consequences are and how it's going to pay for it.
So you can't see Rosemarie, but I can, and she's shaking her head. So I'm going to turn back to you for a minute, Rosemarie, and ask you what's your reaction there.
Hi, John. So I just came from the cost trends hearings held by the Health Policy Commission where this was a subject of discussion today. And what they're saying is that they need to keep the spending within the state's guideline, which is the 3.1% growth
per year. So to clarify for listeners,
yes,
the state has a guideline that insurers have to respond to?
Well, that the total health care spend in the state won't increase by more than 3.1% all in.
And that's audited regularly?
Well, audit would be a strong word, but it's reviewed. There's a spotlight on it, and that's what these hearings are about. So the idea is that what Governor Baker has proposed needs to fit within that construct. And so there, you know, yes, there's growth because of that 3.1%, but overall, I still kind of see that as the goal is to shift some of the current spend.
So Jonathan Gruber, also, go ahead.
I guess I'm shaking my head a little bit, Rosemarie. Basically, in some sense, there's two ways to think about this. One way to think about it is the sort of easier way of saying, look, we have a goal. Let's increase spending in one or decrease spending in the other. The other is to recognize we've never actually faced the challenge of making hard decisions required to meet that goal. We've met it so far because, you know, and the nation's had relatively slow healthcare spending. I'm not so confident you can simply say increase spending on primary care and don't worry, we'll figure it out. We haven't had to do that yet. And so I'm sort of prefer more specific plans. Specifically, what is going to happen to increase spending on primary care and mental health, which are high priorities, and specifically, how is that going to get paid for?
There is another piece of the specific plan that I do want to get some clarification on for our listeners, because there is a prescription drug cost oversight component. And even just that number of syllables is a little bit overwhelming. So, Jonathan, can you walk us through how would that work, and do you believe it would be effective? And then I'm going to let Rosemary respond after that.
Look, prescription drug prices are enormous talk of discussion. Remember, to set levels, prescription drug spending is about 13 or 14% of U.S. healthcare spending. So it's not going to solve all our problems to get prescription drugs out of control. That said, it's the most visible prices we pay, is the enormously high price we pay for prescription drugs. And it's critical that we figure out a way to get those prices under control. It's, once again, not easy. I think starting with the commission to think about it and to think about what you can do is great. I think that the challenge of actually implementing policies that lower prices is hard. And I think Governor Baker is the kind of pragmatic and balanced politician who can get it done, and I hope he will get it done. But we have to remember, for example, Massachusetts is home of the biotech industry, and we need to figure out a way to control those prices that doesn't kill innovation in that sector. And that's going to be the challenge.
Well, and Rosemary, the biotech industry spoke out about this bill and expressed some concern that the emphasis was on prescription drug prices and not on, for example, making hospitals control costs.
Well, so that's interesting because that's what this current proposal is trying to, I'll just use the word rebalance again, under the Cost Control Act from, I think, 2012, which is what we go to the cost trends hearings to hear about, that was focused on hospitals and the other forms of spending, and the criticism has been, well, it didn't really go focus on pharma. So I think they're trying to bring the attention over to there by dealing with some of the outlier spending issues. It falls far short of actual like pricing regulation or anything draconian like that. It's to look at outliers and to look at controlling the rate of growth of spending.
Okay, so for our listeners who may be overwhelmed even by the complexities here, I guess the question is, would the bill, if it passes as it's written, would it save patients money, Rosemary?
That is a good question. I have to think about how it ripples through to the actual out-of-pocket spend.
Does it save anybody money?
It should save patients money, ultimately. But it kind of depends on how lowering those costs, how the insurer processes it, and whether that goes into a lower copay or cost-sharing arrangement. So there's a trickle-down effect in a way that has to happen. And I don't know how the mechanics would work yet.
And Jonathan, as an economist, what's your take on that question? Are there savings here and for people who need to save?
There are definitely savings there. I would view the governor's proposal as a framework, not a detailed proposal. Mm. And so whether those things realize depends on how you take his framework and implement it in a proper way, and there's no better way to do it. Rosemary and I both know, having served in health policy in Massachusetts, there's no better place to do this in Massachusetts. And I have full faith in our public servants to figure out a way to do it. That said, taking this from, gee, let's spend more on primary care, let's spend less on other things, and let's cap the price of prescription drugs, to actually what's the plan, and getting that plan passed is a big step. So
right.
I think it's a great aspirational step. It's not the detailed plan we need.
So to both of you, you heard me say at the top that according to the Center for Health Information and Analysis, Massachusetts spent nearly $61 billion on healthcare from 2017 to 2018, and that was up 3.1% over 2017. But over that same time period, private insurance premiums, the premiums for insurance, went up more than 5.5%, which means the cost for individuals is actually going up even faster than the overall rate of state spending. So does this proposed legislation, Rosemary, address the premium speed of increase effectively?
So I think there's another component of the legislation. I think there's an executive order that goes with it to study what's going on in the individual and small group merged market and see what is driving that rate of increase for consumers who are purchasing through that marketplace. So there is a specific call to action to get the data and do, you know, and then figure out what to do with it.
But that sounds like it means we don't actually know what to do with it now or how to put downward pressure on that rate of increase.
People have a lot of ideas. I think they want to put them all together and then come up with something. I think the overall bill, the thrust of, you know, putting more into preventive care and behavioral health is meant to get at long-term goals of bringing people into a more healthy place and hopefully ultimately reducing costs by keeping people out of the ER and all that.
So, Jonathan, in putting more emphasis on healthcare providers spending on primary care, behavioral health, there has been some concern that smaller hospitals, community health care centers that are already struggling to remain financially viable might be crippled by these new requirements. Is that a reasonable concern? And if so, what do we do about it?
I think that is a legitimate concern. I mean, you know, as always with these concerns, there's this sort of implication that just because a provider is around today delivering care, it should always be around. That's not the way economics works. We have to figure out the right set of providers and where they should be, and it may be that requires some reallocation towards providers that can efficiently provide the kind of behavioral and mental health and still survive. Look, let me just emphasize, I think, an overarching lesson from the governor's proposal that I like the most, which is to elevate the term mental health to the level at which it belongs, which is to be considered as seriously as preventive health care and other health care elements. I think that's been a big problem for too long, that we've considered sort of mental health sort of second-level health care. And I think if providers can't step up to the bar and provide mental health care services at the same level they provide other services, they mean to reallocate the way we provide health care.
And Rosemary, Jonathan's talking about elevating our awareness of mental health. That's mm-hmm. really contained in this behavioral health component.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I would add a shout out to Rhode Island, because they a couple people testified today, including their health insurance commissioner, about things that they have done to try to rebalance and put more dollars into preventive care and do that at a state level. And they showed that they have been moving the needle very successfully. So a lot of times we're proud of the fact that people look to us for lessons, but I thought today was a nice opportunity to look to another state.
All right. There you go, Rhode Island. Don't say we don't say good things. All right. So listen, I want to go national for a minute. We've been covering here on Radio Boston all the Democratic debates so far. And I can tell you from having watched them all and cover them all that the first thing we wind up talking about the next day is healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. Right. And we have this big fight going on between Medicare for all and Medicare for all who want it. WBUR's poll on this issue, which just came out today, found that when asked to pick the single best approach to healthcare reform from their perspective, 44% of Democratic primary voters say that Medicare for all who want it is the right one. Only 28% say that Medicare for all, which is Elizabeth Warren's plan, is the best one. Is that in line with where people have been in the past, Jonathan Gruber? Is that sort of the zeitgeist of American attitudes towards healthcare?
No, it's not. I think it's in line with people's true preferences. It's not in line with actual survey responses. Previously, people would always respond they loved Medicare for all. I think what the debate, the benefit, one of the benefits of Bernie and Elizabeth Warren taking this so seriously is they've actually crystallized and make people take this topic seriously. And unfortunately, they've realized it comes with some costs. It comes with the fact that you'll have to finance it. Comes the fact that people might have to give up health insurance that they are satisfied with today. And that's sort of driven, I think, the generic public opinion view of help Medicare for all downward from where it used to be.
So, Jonathan, stay with that for a second, because Medicare for all supporters are becoming transparent that a lot of people will probably pay increases in taxes, but they're saying that's going to be offset because the transition to single payer would cause savings that will offset any tax increases. What do you make of the argument?
I think that it is absolutely true. What Elizabeth Warren said initially, which is the middle class in general will pay less for health care under Medicare for All, is absolutely true. It is wrong to say, she said in the most recent debate, that everyone will pay less. That is not true, and that's the box President Obama got himself in with the Affordable Care Act. Because once you say everyone, they find one person and you're done. But on average, the middle class, because it's very – I think the key for Elizabeth Warren, the single key for winning this debate, is explaining to Americans, again, to understand the hidden tax that today finances health insurance for the 160 million Americans employer-sponsored insurance, which is our employer pays the cost and they pay us lower wages as a result. We are already paying for our health insurance. We're paying for it in lower wages. But it's not observed. It's not explicit like a payroll tax. So Elizabeth Warren's going to win this debate. It's going to be through actually teaching people economics. So, it's going to be through explaining to people that the health insurance you get today is not free. It costs you something. It costs you lower wages.
So, Rosemary, do you agree?
If people had the you know, patience to learn economics, Jonathan, with all due respect, I feel like, you know, that would be great. But I think that there's going to be this visceral gut reaction. There's, for a lot of people, a distrust of government. And to think that these dollars that their employer is currently kind of benefiting them with would get translated into some kind of government thing and they lose choice along the way, that feels like a new pain point to me, even though the math may be very much the same or better for some of the people. I think it's going to be a very tough sell.
All right, so to wrap this up, Rosemary, I'll go to you first and then to you, Jonathan. Rosemary, the biggest problem or issue facing our national healthcare system, in your opinion, is...
I think we spend too much and to get too little, particularly because of the inequities in the system.
And Jonathan Gruber, how about you?
I would say the single biggest problem is the prices that we pay. I'd go more specific to what Rosemary said. We spend too much, but I think we've reached a consensus in health economics. The real problem is that an unregulated price-setting mechanism simply does not work in healthcare. And we need to figure out a way to control prices the way the rest of the world does.
Okay. Jonathan Gruber, professor of economics at MIT and a key architect of both the Massachusetts healthcare reform known as Romney Care and the National Affordable Care Act. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Rosemary Day, founder and CEO of Day Health Strategies, which works with private and public organizations on health reform. Thanks so much.
Thank you.